Blog Talk Radio.
Tuning in, All Subjects Everything is an internet interactive radio show. When we are live on the air, you can call in with a question or comment at 661-554-9194. You can also check us out in the Blog Talk Radio Network chat room, as a few of my Steam listeners like to do from time to time. But if you can't catch us live, good news is we're available on iTunes. You can go to the iTunes store, search for All Subjects Everything under podcast. You can download the shows for absolutely free. And while you're there on the iTunes page, rate us from 1 star to 5 stars and write a little review. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear and see in future shows, and we will do our very best to accommodate you. And for you smartphone users, All Subjects Everything is available on the Stitcher mobile app. You can download Stitcher to your smartphone. Search for All Subjects Everything there. Take us with you in the car, the gym, the office, you know, wherever you want to get in on the conversation. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, too, facebook.com/AllSubjectsEverything. There you will find past show links, news and updates as to what we're working on, and we're trying to turn it into a forum. We'll ask questions, have poll topics. You guys can answer them, talk amongst yourselves. We'll jump in every now and then, and that'll help us develop a better show. Okay, been 3 weeks. Got sidetracked with a snowstorm. A couple other things happened. Started getting busy with, you know, work and job searches and different things, so kind of, I don't want to say I forgot about All Subjects Everything, but I was just like, it wasn't important. I mean, it wasn't important to me, and that's really, you know, kind of funny considering how much I used to live for doing this show. But hopefully, once again, I can get back to, you know, the bare bones and the basics of doing this here show. But enough explanation. Let's get to business. Super Bowl 50, final game of the NFL season last night, and maybe the final game of Peyton Manning's career. And if it was, he went out a winner. Aided by a strong, strong defense led by MVP linebacker Von Miller, the Broncos picked up their third Super Bowl championship, defeating the 15-1 Carolina Panthers 24-10 last night. And Palo Alto had a Super Bowl flashback to a different Super Bowl in Santa Clara, actually, in Super Bowl 50, the 50th big game ever. And we'll talk maybe just a little bit about the whole Cam Newton thing. Maybe I'll get more details to that on Tuesday. But as far as the game goes, Peyton Manning wasn't Peyton Manning that, you know, could throw the ball down the field, you know, for 300-400 yards and 4 touchdowns and all of that. But he did the bare minimum. And that was all that was required. That was really all that was needed. Because that Bronco defense really, you know, gave Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers some looks that I don't think they've seen before. Like, that was the first time all year I actually recall the Carolina Panthers being getting punched in the mouth, and they did not have a response for it. Credit goes to Wade Phillips, who may not be a memorable head coach, but probably may go down as in that Buddy Ryan, you know, Bill Belichick pantheon as one of the best defensive coordinators to ever coach a football team. He turned the hounds loose on Cam Newton last night. He saw the weakness of Michael Orr at left tackle, and he just rotated DeMarcus Ware and Vaughn Miller all night long. And Cam literally had no time to throw the ball. He couldn't even, you know, find a running lane. The Broncos' defense was excellent. And I had a conversation with one of my editors at my freelance job on Twitter last night. He said, we got to start talking about the Broncos' defense this year, right up there with the 85 Bears. And I said, considering the level of talent that the Broncos kind of dismissed, you know, this postseason, think about it. Ben Roethlisberger, though injured, Tom Brady, 100%, Cam Newton, 100%. They looked like very ordinary quarterbacks against that Broncos defense. And they don't have, like, you know, they don't have the Super Bowl shuffle type, you know, personalities. They don't have the, you know, statistics to back them up as one of the greatest defenses of all time. But they were the top defense in the National Football League this year. It speaks for itself. And Vaughn Miller, to his credit, has done everything that he said he would do this postseason. Bill Cowher asked him before the AFC Championship game, what do you need to do to beat the Patriots? He said, if I sack Tom Brady twice, we'll win the game. Well, he sacked Tom Brady four times and intercepted him. Denver won. Tracy Wilson asked Vaughn Miller before the game what it would take for him to stop Cam. He said, just play our game. And that's exactly what the Broncos did from jump, play their game. And you got to give the corners credit. Aqib Talib, even though he's crazier than an outhouse rat, Chris Harris Jr. did an excellent job. T.J. Ward and Darian Stewart, the safeties, did an outstanding job of keeping the top covered. So Ted Ginn and Corey Brown really couldn't get off. And they the linebackers kept Greg Olsen in check. So when you take away all of Cam Newton's receivers, and then you have, you know, Mike Tolbert fumbling twice, Cam fumbling twice. Your offense is rattled beyond belief. And all credit due to the Denver defense. They showed up and showed out. Make no mistakes about it. They came to play. They absolutely came to play. And that's not to say the Panthers' defense didn't come to play, because they only allowed one offensive touchdown, and that came off of a fumble deep in Carolina territory. So I don't even put that touchdown on the Panthers' defense. I put that on the Panthers' offensive line. And Cam Newton, and Denver only managed three field goals offensively, if you take away that one touchdown. You know, the Brandon McManus, you know. No, Brandon McManus is the punter. Sorry about that. No, wait. He's the kicker. Sorry, Brandon McManus, the kicker. Yeah, made all three of his. Good job. But Peyton Manning, it's going to be interesting. You know, he's won 200 games, the first quarterback in NFL history to do so. He's got two Super Bowl rings with two different teams. Not a lot of guys can say that. In fact, no one can say that. He's the first starting quarterback to win two rings with two different teams. That's pretty damn good. Very good. But then there will be this whole HGH cloud hanging over his head, and rightfully so. But as far as, you know, the other stuff, you know what I mean, as far as, you know, just him on the field, as far as him just being Peyton Manning, it really, 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 really doesn't get much better than the career he's had. Some people can say, yeah, he came up short in some big games. Yeah, he never really matched Tom Brady shot for shot. But you got to remember, the last time Tom Brady beat Peyton Manning in a postseason was 2005. Peyton's won every matchup since. Yes, they've only met three times, but still. And that also means three straight AFC Championship games. Because remember, Colts came back in 2006. Peyton just Omaha'd the Patriots to death in 2013. And he had a defense to stifle Tom Brady this past January. So for all of this, you know, Brady has Peyton's number. Peyton is going to retire with the last laugh, assuming he retires. But you gotta think he's done. He turns 40 this year. He's got young kids. You know, that cervical spinal fusion surgery that he had a few years ago, only God knows how long that is going to hold up. I assume at some point that he's going to look at his body and say, you know what, 70,000 passing yards, 200 wins, 2 Super Bowl trophies, I'm good. I'm going to go play with my kids for as long as I can before my body really starts breaking down. We got to look at Peyton as probably one of the top 5 quarterbacks to play the game. Because you got Montana, you've got Favre, Brady, Peyton. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good Mount Rushmore right there. I guess if you want to put his boss John Elway in that top 5, you could do that as well. So yeah. Pretty good way to go out for Peyton, and pretty good, you know, capper on the season for a Denver defense that literally saved their bacon so many times during the season. And just, you got to respect them. Got to respect them. Carolina, meanwhile, they'll be back. Got to remember, Cam Newton did not have his top young receiver. Kelvin Benjamin tore his ACL in training camp, didn't play all year. So he was trapped with Devin. Well, I don't want to say trapped because, I mean, that disrespects those guys. Devin Funchess was a rookie. Corey Brown is better served as a slot guy. And what Cam Newton got from Ted Ginn Jr., right up until the Super Bowl, Ted Ginn Jr. is MVP caliber in itself, okay? Like, we've all had so many jokes about Ted Ginn having stone bricks for hands and this, that, and the other. And Ted Ginn caught some really big passes for Carolina this year. Well, right up until the one he went let go through his hands and got intercepted in the second half of the Super Bowl. But you had to know that Cinderella, that carriage was going to turn to a pumpkin on midnight soon enough, and it just happened to be in Super Bowl 50. It is what it is. Can't be mad at it. And yeah, we'll probably end up talking about the whole Cam press conference thing tomorrow because it's just, you know, is what it is. You know, we'll talk more about that because I think Tuesday is going to be Black Tuesday on all subjects and everything. I mean, it's Black History Month. I mean, Black girls won this weekend. The Black superhero did lose, but we'll talk more about, you know, Cam and the media perception of Cam and Beyonce and others on Tuesday because I've got two more things that I want to get to, and we will, we'll get to those shortly. But yeah, just, you know, credit to the Denver Broncos. They were the best team they proved to be the best team in football this year. They proved it. I mean, they beat everybody in front of them, you know, that was of note. Granted, a healthy Pittsburgh Steelers team makes that divisional game a lot more interesting. So, I think the Broncos should send Bengals linebacker Vontaze Burfict a Super Bowl ring because he took Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger pretty much out of the equation. So gotta give Burfict a piece of that Lombardi Trophy, Denver. Sorry, just saying. And Brady and the Patriots, you know, while strong, they still, you know, they haven't seen a defense like that. And the Broncos had beat them already prior in the regular season in overtime. So it really wasn't a shock that Denver beat them again. But I think what really shocked us all is just how average they made Cam look. Like, Cam was frustrated from the word go. Like, it didn't help that ridiculous call stood on Jericho Cottry's drop, which really wasn't a drop. And then, of course, two plays later, Von Miller comes and just absolutely takes the ball from Cam, and then, you know, they get a touchdown out of that. It just wasn't Carolina's day yesterday. And that's the way it goes. Unfortunate, yes. But not the end of the world. I think they'll be back. The overall thing is you keep Cam Newton in good health. You get Benjamin back. Maybe you get, you know, a more elusive change of pace back to pair with Jonathan Stewart. You also get Benjamin back, and then you maybe want to you know, shore up that spot with another burner that you won't have to rely so much on Ted Ginn as a third receiver. Or fourth, whichever your preference. So Carolina will be back, because I really don't see anybody in the NFC competing with them. Green Bay had some injuries, but their defense is still just average as all get out. Minnesota's another year or two away. The NFC East is a crap show. The Cardinals are very, very good, but the Panthers have their number. So I think I'm just going to go on record as saying is I think we'll see the Carolina Panthers in Super Bowl 51. Unfinished business. But credit to the Denver Broncos. They were the best team in the league this year. They were the best team in the league this year. All the way through. They proved it. They proved it. They absolutely proved it. All credit due to them. And that's it for football, folks. I guess we'll just be, you know, waiting free agency, the draft, and then, you know, preseason starts, you know, first weekend in August. So we've got 6 months of, I don't know, other stuff. You know, of course we'll talk NBA, you know, some baseball, but more often than not, we'll just stick to, you know, society and things and music. Speaking of music, on to our next subject. I was leaving work on Thursday night, got in the car, turned on the radio to WDAS-FM, the old folk station out of Philly, and noticed they were playing a lot of Earth, Wind, and Fire, and I was like, well, this is different. I mean, it's cool because Earth, Wind, and Fire is one of the greatest bands ever. I was like, wonder why all the Earth, Wind, and Fire? And, of course, the DJ comes on the radio. The great Tony Brown says, in case you missed the news, Maurice White, the founder of Earth, Wind, and Fire, died after a lengthy battle with Parkinson's disease. And I'm like, not expecting it. I mean, I knew he had retired from public life because he had Parkinson's, but I didn't know that, you know, the end was near. And for a man to have lived 74 years in the last 25 with Parkinson's and, you know, not really, you know, really being heard from again until his grand exit, it sounds like Maurice White. I mean, just, you know, just doing things his way. The man had a lengthy career. He started off as a session drummer for Chess Records. He actually drummed on the Fontella Bass hit Rescue Me, which earned a Grammy in 1965. But he started a group called Sgt. Pepper's after the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album. And when that didn't take off, he moved his younger brother, Verdeen, to California, got some new players, and started a group based on the elements of his astrology chart called Earth, Wind, and Fire. And they got off to a slow start. Their first three or four albums really didn't do much, but then by about 1975 or so, the song I played at the beginning of the show, Shining Star, you know, was their first pop breakout hit, and then they just went on to dominate the rest of the 70s. And I always say, the 70s was a very competitive period for bands who played their own instruments. You had Earth, Wind, and Fire. You had the Isley Brothers. You had Parliament Funkadelic. You had Mandrill. Mass Production, Brass Construction, Brothers Johnson, Heat Wave, Ohio Players, Slave, Lakeside, Confunction. I could go on and on and on. Like you had to be good. You had to be good. And Earth, Wind, Fire was great. You know, Maurice White, you know, you'll see a lot of, I mean, there's a great article on NPR.com about the audacity of the audacity of Uplift. And that's what Maurice White, you know, pretty much, you know, lived for Earth, Wind, and Fire being. It wasn't, you know, I mean, they had their political moments, they had their love-making moments, but all in all, you can't really point to a super sad Earth, Wind, and Fire song. Even After the Love Is Gone, which is one of the greatest breakup songs of all time, has a triumphant feel to it. Like it's one of the stages of grief where you've come to acceptance. And After Love Is Gone is a perfect song for acceptance of breaking up. Like, I don't know how in the world you can make a song that's about, you know, being, you know, something happened along the way, and yesterday was all we had, something happened along the way, and we used to be happy and sad. Somehow, that was a happy record for a lot of people. I mean, you get a group of people over 45 or 50, they start singing After Love Is Gone like it's the damn national anthem. And it's a breakup song. That sort of, you know, spirit of, you know, community and we'll get through this together and the original, we gonna be all right. That's Earth, Wind, and Fire, and that was the vision of Maurice White. He presided over some of the greatest black musicians ever. His brother, his younger brother Verdeen on the bass is a monster. Ralph Johnson, one of the greatest, you know, percussionists of all time. Larry Dunn, a hell of a keyboard player. Philip Bailey, who goes so damn high with the falsetto, Rick James said they would have to castrate him if he wanted to ever match Philip Bailey's falsetto. All these folks were in the same group, but they were all taking orders from the same congenial guy who had this belief of, he was an Afrocentric guy. He was Afrofuturist. You know, he believed in, you know, spiritualness and, you know, astrology. And if you really want to get an understanding of who Maurice White is, you know, just listen to his monologue at the end of All About Love. The greatest thing that he could probably ever say, and it's probably something that, you know, everybody should carry with them through life, is if there ain't no beauty, you got to make some beauty. If something's bothering you, you know, if you feel like something's lacking in your life and you have the ability to change that, change it. Create it. Make your beauty. If there ain't no beauty, you got to make some beauty. Simple as that. And it really doesn't get much easier than that. And that's pretty much, you know, if that's a way that Maurice White wanted to leave this world, I think he would want you to listen to the last couple minutes of It's All About Love and just, you know, be filled up, be whole. Simple as that. And lastly, saying goodbye to a friend today. His funeral starts in a few minutes in Harlem. And I wish I could be there, but I just didn't have the resources to make it happen. But I know he's listening. And if you're listening to this program, you know, if by off chance you've heard of Michael Feeney before, if not from last week, but you have. Michael Feeney is pretty much responsible for me, you know, having a career in journalism, and I greatly appreciate him. But as a friend, he just had a greater impact on everybody. He went out of his way to make an effort to get along with people, and in turn, you can't find anybody to say a bad thing about Michael Feeney because there's nothing bad to say. Very funny guy, hard worker, serious, always has advice, always made time for people, and was one of the top young journalists walking this planet. Like, Mike, you know, made a story personal, like, and that's why people trusted him. And even though he was good at the news stuff, I was so happy to hear that he wanted to pursue entertainment full time. In fact, he was about to move to Atlanta to work for CNN's entertainment department. I was like, this is where his lane is going to be. He's going to thrive. And in fact, the last time we talked was about the Royal Rumble, the week before he passed. But he touched so many lives. Like, there's the Dell State community. There's the National Association of Black Journalists community. There's the communities that he served as a journalist in New York, New Jersey, Kentucky, Michigan, all over the country. Everybody that's, you know, there's a 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon. There might be 2 or 3 from Michael Feeney. That's how many lives he touched. That's how many people loved him. And it's hard to talk about him in the past tense. He died January 31st, age 32, 2 years younger than me, because we're Libras. We have birthdays around the same time. Mine is September 25th. His is September 29th. We always joke with each other about, you know, he'll wish me happy birthday, and I'll be like, hey, Mike, I see you in a couple of days, you know, that type of thing. But my mother is overly religious. I'm not. But she brought it, but she kind of sort of, you know, made it make sense for me when she said that, you know, God had another assignment for him, that he had done all the assignments he was going to do on earth. And that's hard for us to accept because 32 years old, you really think you're not supposed to be talking about your friends in the past tense. not at this age. 65, 70, maybe. Sure, definitely. But 32, very hard to accept. But if it's one thing that I hold the belief in is that there is, you know, something after death. And the night he died, I had a dream that I was back in the Hornet newspaper office. All of our friends were there, like all of the people that we worked with in the Hornet, all the people we knew from NABJ. You know, we were all in the Hornet newspaper office, and Mike Feeney was teaching us to do the Dell State Slide, a dance that he made famous. And I have to believe that he's teaching St. Peter and Jesus and everybody else that's going on before us how to do the slide. That's just something I have to hold on to. That's just something I hold on to because I believe that, you know, his story may have ended on earth, but the lives that he's touched, the people that, you know, you can just go on Facebook and just, you know, search his name and see how many people have poured out tributes to him, from regular people like me and you to people like, you know, Reverend Al Sharpton, Charlemagne the God, WWE legend Mark Henry. Like, he touched so many people. He touched so many people. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a part of some calculated effort. It wasn't a branding plot. It wasn't, you know, an image thing. It was Mike Feeney being Mike Feeney. He was just somebody, he was just a lovable person that everybody got along with, that, you know, if he could help you, he would help you. If he couldn't, he would find somebody that could help you. He was just a people person. He was just a people person. And that's why so many of us are heartbroken, because he touched so many of our lives in different ways, whether it was professionally, as a friend, as, you know, a mentor or a role model. He meant so many things to so many different people. And if it's one thing that we should all be so lucky to say at the end of our lives, no matter if it's 32 or 82 or whatever, when people can sit around for days and just talk about all the good times they've had with you and not a bad thing come up, that's a life well lived. And Michael Feeney, though gone now at 32, he lived one of the greatest lives of all. Rest well, my friend. We love you and we miss you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to All Subjects Everything today. Greatly appreciate your time. If you missed us live, blogtalkradio.com/Chris Stevens on air, iTunes, All Subjects Everything, same thing for Stitcher Mobile. We will see you all tomorrow, and until then, y'all be good or be good at it.
down.